This is a listener-sponsored community radio station providing you a Pacifica state of mind since 1960. It is now 1 minute past 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Everybody, Kev O'Donoghue and Ben Starr, back with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests, try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And in the studio today, we have two guests, two longtime guests of the old DeMille Center and now the Positive Mind Center. We have Linda Vanilla, longtime associate. How are you, Linda?
I'm well, thank you, Kevin.
Linda,
thank you.
Is our trauma specialist here at the center, and she's going to have a lot to say about this traumatized individual we're about to talk about. And Kent has been on many, many times with Armand talking about medications. Kent is a psychiatrist here at the Positive Mind Center, and he's also a substance abuse specialist. And today we're going to talk about that endlessly fascinating, beguiling, sinister character called the psychopath and psychopathology. What is a psychopath? How do you know you're in the presence of someone who is a psychopath or might be a psychopath? What are the qualities of a psychopath? Why are they attractive on some level? Very attractive, very charming. And on another level, very, very scary. Kent, maybe you can get us started. What is it about a psychopath that is charming or attractive or interesting, and what are the traits?
Well, some of the traits of a psychopath or somebody with antisocial disorder is these are people that, again, have some strange capacity to put on masks to hide the fact that they often have very little, if not, or very shallow emotional world. And their basic capacity for human contact, love, empathy seems to be missing in them. But at an early age, they understand to fit in with other people. They learn to mimic and to play act getting along with others. So they become masterful manipulators and masterful liars to get their way, to interact with others. But at a deep core, there's a basic lack of love and tenderness and empathy for the people around them.
So it's a good. It's an interesting idea. So, are psychopaths born this way? You say they mimic normal behavior, or they learn how to adapt or adjust to their environment or to people around them by manipulating their environment, manipulating people. Is there something missing in them?
Yeah, it's thought that most antisocial or sociopathic people, it's some combination of either genetics, because we know that it runs in families, and we know with animals that we can breed things like aggressivity and the like. And it's not surprising that with human beings that the same kind of genetic evidence suggests that twins are more likely to, identical twins are more likely to have sociopathic behavior than fraternal twins, so that they have the identical same mother or father or environment that would impact both of them. But there seems to be something, you know, genetic underlying antisocial behavior that we can talk about later, what some of the brain chemistry and brain issues related to that. But I think most of us in the field of trying to work with people with antisocial or sociopathic behaviors are trying to figure out if something's gone on in their childhood, in their development, that I like to call the software, not the hard drive, but the soft drive, that maybe we can help them undo a little bit, you know, some kind of trauma, some kind of abuse, some kind of massive neglect in childhood that can contribute to a real lack of connectedness with other people and a real dark sense of needing control and perhaps constantly being angry and aggressive with others.
Kent, I'm sure you read that book, Snakes in Suits.
Yeah.
That was, came out about 10 years ago. What is it about psychopaths that allow them to be so successful when they enter business places, office places?
Well, again, I think they are masterfully able to charm people, you know, and charm, again, is a very sort of conscious idea of saying what I need to say for to win you over, to have you feel like I like you. So if Kevin says, I like the New York Jets, I will say, I like the New York Jets. If Linda says, I like the New York Giants, I like walk out of his office and I say, Linda, I like the New York Giants. Like whatever it takes for you to like me, I will mimic and I will find out about you and manipulate you by not being genuine or real, but just saying the things that you want to hear to have you to like me so that I then have some control over you and have you believe that I'm your friend. And of course, you know, they have a dagger behind their back often in terms of how they're going to just use you as an object to get something from them, to get money from you, to get sex, to get something from you. Because the sociopath often sees people as kind of objects for their enjoyment.
And it must be hard to have compassion for these people. We have to remember that these people are ill. And so it's beguiling for us mental health therapists and doctors to have compassion for these people as they're manipulating and really mimicking behaviors that are going to work in their favor. Well,
I think that's where it's really important for us as clinicians to better understand that what we're looking at is a person who doesn't have that capacity for empathy. And that in and of itself gives us a broader picture of how to approach them. And I think that that has to be well understood, and we have to be well grounded in understanding that so that we can have some compassion. Because without that, there's not even a starting point. But may I say just one other thing in answer to you, Ben? I think that the psychopath has an ability in the ability to exploit others for their own means, and therefore it looks like they have a better edge on the average population because they're very focused in what it is they're trying to achieve. Now, they don't see that it may be that they have to step on others or woo the head CEO or bribe whoever they need to bribe. They're not considering all of that. They're only considering that what they need is to get where they're going. So that's where I think there's an intense energy that you see in these CEOs or these people that seem to master everything around them in being able to exploit whatever they need to do in order to achieve what their goal is.
We had Craig Newman on the program a couple years back, and he's a pretty prominent researcher in the field of psychopathy, and he was part of a study that found that while about 1% of the general population exhibits psychopathic traits, that up to 3% of people in management positions exhibit those traits, and that I think 15% of people in prison manifest those traits. But the fact that it was three times as prevalent in management positions in businesses and offices was astonishing.
Yeah.
Well, again, everybody has the experience, I think, with salespeople and their remarkable ability to have me, you know, walk into Armani and have them say like, oh, you look really good in that suit and you can't walk out of here without it and whatever. And as soon as I tell them I'm just like window shopping, they cut me off or, you know, like I think salespeople, you know, many positions like charm is really what they use constantly to make people feel genuinely liked and genuinely admired and cared for as long as there's a sale coming or as long as I can seduce you or something like that. I'm just going to be that. But it's remarkable with sociopaths. As soon as I realize you're not going to do the sale, as soon as I realize you're married or something and you don't want to have an affair, I drop you like tissues or something. Like you have no use for me. I don't want friendship. I don't want warmth. Don't want a connection. I want money. I want sex. I want power.
Linda, does this show up in women?
Oh, yes, it does.
Because
yes.
We often think of psychopaths, all the great psychopaths in the movies are men.
Yeah.
And we're just wondering, I mean...
For sure, Kim, women, yes. I think, you know, without bashing either males or females, I think we as clinicians have to see that there's a broad scope to these antisocial capacities, these diagnoses, and these symptoms. But I think that while we would see them more likely with the aggressive CEO, the person who is the salesman, as you mentioned, Ken, you're giving examples, and I see it all to be males, whereas I said to the this morning as I'm walking down Fifth Avenue watching many females going to and fro work, I think that I could see that women could be extremely manipulative, very bullyish, but they can do it maybe in a quieter way, maybe in a more discreet way, maybe a little bit more manipulative way. Yeah. I think they tend to be very devious. They tend to lie and gossip just as well as men do. But I think it does broaden out in many different ways among women as opposed to men or compared to men or whatever. But yes, I think it shows its face in many, many ways, just as among the females population as it does the males.
So manipulativeness is rule number one. I mean, but we all run into manipulation all day, the time.
I think that it's manipulation to the point of exploitation, okay. Ken. I think that's how I see it. Yes, I think we all have our own way of, like you said, Ken, you know, siding with one person or siding with the other or looking for appeal or looking to accommodate or looking for approval. I think that that's common. But I think that when you're talking about the psychopathic personality, that person goes beyond that feeling of just wanting approval of others, but it's an exploitation of others. It's a deliberate, aggressive exploiting others to accommodate what they believe is their need. And there's always a sense of them having to have kind of a step above you so that basically whatever it is that they'll be the bully in the group, they'll be the bully on the playground so that they can have control over those underneath them. They don't have to follow the rules. They don't have to abide by the rules, but others do.
Right.
So.
Well, I think, you know, one of the ways I see, like, emotional manipulation is when somebody gets caught in a lie. You know, my own feeling, obviously people lie, how big was that fish you caught in the lake or something like that, you know, all sorts of minor lies, sure. You know, to protect my self-esteem.
Golf course.
Yeah, but, you know, what sociopaths do is their reaction to being caught in a lie to be angry. For example, so again, most of us, if Kevin or Linda says I lied about something with a patient or some colleague or something like that, if it's not true, like I would be like, that's slander, right? That's unfair. Mm. Somebody said some smack behind my back. That's not true. I get angry and indignant if it's not true. Sociopaths are notorious to be able to act angry and indignant when in fact they're lying. And the human response when you confront somebody about something that if they lie and they avert their eyes sheepishly or whatever, some part of you is like, oh, I don't know. But the human reaction is if I confront somebody with a lie and they react angrily and with some sense of injustice that I wounded them, my reaction is I must be wrong.
Yeah.
I must be off base. And it's all manufactured, this indignant rage, because they know they did it. They know they're lying, and yet it's masterful.
So feeling bad about getting caught in a lie would be the normal response. And the psychopath, sociopath, does not recognize that they're even lying, or if they do, they get angry instead.
Well, that's where you have that defensive mechanism that they avoid the feeling of accountability,
yeah.
of empathy, of any kind of ability to sympathize or have some kind of, oh my goodness, I've been caught in a lie, therefore I must say that I have to be accountable for that.
Yeah.
And they'll do whatever it takes to get out of that position because that's that narcissistic wound that they cannot feel. So they'll do whatever they need to do to avoid that space of being caught.
Yeah. It's amazing, astonishing how an individual like this gets created and gets born. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they made or are they born this way? We know we're supposed to have empathy for them and compassion for them, but how does this creature develop? How does this person become a psychopath? Ken, are they born psychopaths?
Yeah, I don't think that the research suggests that it's, you know, so clear that, again, genetics and some of the biochemistry and the brain chemistry that some people, you know, are dealt make it harder for them to resist their impulses, to think ahead in terms of something that is immediately enjoyable and think about the long-term consequences of behavior, what we might talk about later in terms of impulse control. You know, the frontal lobes of our brain are what is remarkably developed in human beings that separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom. You know, the fact that we're able to think through an impulse or a thought or a reaction to what is the consequences of this? What will happen if I get angry at my boss or I pinch that cute girl on the subway? You know, I think through just the impulse, the thought, the feeling I'm having, and what will happen to me and what will happen to this other person is probably impaired genetically with many of these people, you know, their frontal lobes. But clearly the evidence suggests that, again, many of these childhoods of people who develop sociopathy, there's a massive amount of neglect and abuse and trauma that causes them to get numb, to get their emotions to be completely sort of obliterated because they're so overwhelmingly bad, and they go through life, again, strangely numb and disconnected, often with anger as the only safe emotion, but love, tenderness, empathy, all those things are not helpful if you're getting abused or neglected on a regular basis. And then psychologically, a child can start cutting off their emotional world from the outside world.
So it sounds like you see psychopathy as potentially a defense mechanism in response to trauma or some sort of PTSD.
Right. A kind of very adaptive way. Because again, the next time my uncle molests me or the next time my mother takes off to get crack instead of feeding me, whatever, it actually is less sad if I'm not.
Right.
It's actually giving me a sense of control.
Somewhat bearable.
Right. And I think that one of the key things about manipulation and lie and dominating is all about control. Again, these are often people that have an environment around them out of their control. Right. So they have to numb out their feelings so that they get a sense that they can, you know, at least not be overwhelmed with bad feelings. And then it becomes incredibly important to be control freaks, you know, to be in control of every person, every situation, and dominate every situation that they're in so that they control their environment and control other people.
Right. Feelings become dangerous.
Absolutely. It's better to stay numb. And what I also found very interesting as we looked at the research and in our own practice, when we see that with psychopathology, we see that the difference of the psychopath is that they will be very much turned on to any kind of sensationalism or aggression or violence, whereas you're watching on the media or you're experiencing something where it's a brutal fight, where the psychopath would almost be attracted to that because it would be something that they would actually soothe them.
Really?
And I think that that's a very interesting concept when we're looking at diagnosis.
The more negativity in the social scene for the psychopath, the better.
Exactly.
They don't like a smooth, positive transaction socially. They want it to be negative.
Because based on what Ken just described,
right,
how because of the absence of love, kindness, and you know so foreign to them, anger is really the only emotion that they can feel and that they can allow and they can be safe with.
And anger is empowering. It makes sense that they would identify with that emotion the most.
Absolutely.
Allow themselves to keep that one.
Sure. It's so safe.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gives them control.
Yeah. So childhood, Kent, how does this show up in childhood? How would a parent know that I have a potential problem child?
Well, again, I think a lot of the characteristics that we're talking about, antisocial adult, antisocial, many people feel like you know, shy or social phobia. That's far from what we're talking about. We're talking about anti-social norms, social agreement of how we interact with each other. And then with that would be the laws of our society. Mm-hmm. So again, like an adult, the disregard for rules and the contempt and difficulty with authority is often very true with children. The childhood story, you know, of teachers, principals, other parents, you know, getting grossly disrespectful behavior. And then the child very much cheating on their homework, trying to, you know, get every rule that's put down in front of them, trying to get around it. Like every rule is to be masterly, sort of negotiated, every tax loophole, as they're constantly looking for ways around rules, because part of this underlying, you know, callousness towards others is often linked with a kind of sense of superiority, of sense of grandiosity, of narcissism. That I would say every antisocial I've dealt with, there's clearly narcissistic tendencies in there that give them this sense of better than superiority. And that sometimes justifies in their own minds why I can break all these rules, because I'm better than most people. I shouldn't have to be live by normal rules because I'm superior. I have different.
What are some examples of those traits?
What's that?
Those traits that you've observed in people that you've worked with. What are some examples?
Well,
how do they manifest themselves?
Well, I think again this sense of superiority. Not only their constant bragging about themselves and talking about themselves, just like a classic narcissist would, you know, always talking about their achievements, always talking how great they are, how beautiful they are, how smart they are, how much smarter, better driver, better this. You meet people.
And never talking about loving another person.
Not loving
another
person.
They'll never talk about concern about another person.
Right. And never making self-deprecatory jokes about themselves,
right.
never teasing themselves or making jokes at their own expense. And with that, you know, one of the things that I think is true is a kind of like contempt and aggressive sort of disregard for normal people, regular people, average people, you know, mediocre people.
Right.
And then that could be linked with a kind of, I've seen racism, you know, just generally grouping Muslims or blacks or Jews or whatever, women for that, you know, into just like contemptuous categories. And a lot of the contempt of a narcissist or an antisocial underlies their sense of superiority. And it comes seeping through with their aggressive, angry feelings of regular people.
Narcissism is like the payoff. Since I can't feel anything, at least let me be better than everybody else.
Right.
So this pervasive narcissism is a huge identifier of psychopaths.
Yeah, I think that a lot of narcissists in general, they want to be praised and they want to be admired. That's what's important. I need to be valedictorian. I need to be captain of the football team. I need to be the homecoming queen, not most popular. You know, the old saying, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. When I say that to some of my patients, they just laugh. They're like, it's not.
This is New York City.
It's New York City. That won't get you on David Letterman to be nice.
Exactly. Let me just get to that question too, Ben, if I may. As you say, what are the traits, I think what you're asking, in children?
Yes.
What can you identify in a child? And I think it's important to note that according to the DSM-5, antisocial would not be given to anyone under 18, and I think for good reason, because in childhood you'll see a conduct disorder, you'll see an oppositional disorder, you'll see anxiety, you'll see ADHD, you'll see a number of different things that may mimic these kinds of symptoms that we're talking about. But antisocial is something different. Something is, as you're saying, Ken, is much, much deeper, more pervasive. I think in childhood, where you will find those, I always say I have four children of my own, and I must say that every child of mine has tried in all these ways of curiosity, of exploring, of lying, of manipulating, of bullying. I think all of these things are part and parcel to human development in childhood. However, I do feel that's where the family of origin, the culture, the childhood years of where that child is raised are very, very paramount and very, very much influential. And I think there's another piece here where, you know, antisocial behavior is kind of passed down, although we don't see a genetic predisposition, we can see that the behaviors of the mother or the father or the guardian or the caregiver of the children are very much tied in with this. Ken, when you were speaking about how, I don't know if it was you, Ken, I think it was you, Ken, who said about when a child is misbehaving in school, goes home, and the parent, You poor child, we're going to just go ahead and reprimand the teacher because you're the one who's right. The teacher is wrong. And I've seen that, and I've seen how that is so destructive because the child then at a young age knows that or thinks that they're better, that they're above, and they're right now manipulating their world. Their mother is right on their side.
Okay.
So I think that that is a very telltale sign of what I think is oftentimes happening in generation because I've seen it with my own children in how they were raised in the public school system, and how now they're raising their children, which is interesting. But I do believe that a respect for authority and respect for norms and values is part and parcel to all of this. And the culture and the very much the norms and the values that we're in right now are very interesting to look at and to examine.
One of the qualities of a conduct disorder for a kid is making fires, burning fires. So if a kid is making a fire in the hallway at school and his mother is coming up to the school taking his side, we know we have a problem.
Absolutely.
Talk about animals, the relationship of psychopaths as children to animals, and how's it, this is a classic telltale sign.
Yeah, I think that the enjoyment, right, fires, bedwetting, and herding animals was the famous triad of childhood sociopathy. And certainly the herding, the enjoyment in herding of animals is, you know, a very dark, sort of sadistic, you know, sort of, you know, enjoying the suffering of other creatures as, you know, a very disturbing kind of sign. It's interesting. We were talking beforehand about, again, like the alpha male or something like that. So it's like, well, is this any different than the animal kingdom, the CEO the president of the United States? Or they lie or something like that. They get to the top or whatever. And my belief is that animals are in some ways not as twisted as many sociopaths. Like animals don't enjoy. Yeah. I mean, they fight each other for mate and they fight to get prey. It's unclear that animals, their own morality and spiritual self sense of their interactions with others is as dark and disturbed as human beings who are, again, enjoying the suffering of others, like, again, serial killers and the very famous kind of psychopaths in American history that seem to go out of their way to hurt and maim others for pleasure.
The way I like to put it is you can always trust a tiger to be a tiger or a shark to be a shark, right? If you get eaten by a tiger, eaten by a shark, well, you know, that's because they're a tiger or they're a shark, but you can't always trust a human to have humanity.
Right.
Indeed not. Especially psychopaths. Before the break, we want to tell you there are 10 classic professions that attract psychopaths. Lawyer is one of them. CEO of corporations are another. TV and radio personalities. Salespeople. Surgeons. Why surgeons and not doctors? Because doctors are on the list of non-psychopathic professions. Tell us, Kent, why would that be?
Oh, baby. Don't throw me a slow ball over our home plate because it just makes my life
Well, talk about control. Surgeons are like have master control.
Yeah, I mean, I think lots of I don't want to generalize. Obviously, there's some very sweet surgeons. But one can imagine that, you know, you hear about surgeons with their bedside manner and their difficulty with bedside manner. Mm-hmm. And it's often true. That stereotype, even though it's a stereotype, but it's often true. And it's because that involves real empathy and compassion before or particularly after a procedure that many of your listeners would know that their surgeon lacked, because that's a very compassionate, empathic part. Certainly, two aspects of being a surgeon go right onto the list of antisocial. One is a kind of recklessness, right? A certain grandiosity and recklessness that antisocials have, right?
Sure.
And it's very interesting in movies, you know, the good guys and the bad guys have nerves of steel, but certainly antisocial bad guys are constantly, you know, very reckless and the like. So you have to be kind of godlike to feel like you're godlike to go up and cut somebody open in it as a surgeon, right? You have to have that godlike omnipotence. And then secondly, let's be clear, it's a lot of cutting with knives.
There you go, knives with their own initials on it. We're going to take a musical break. We'll be back in the second half to take your calls and finish out this list of professions that attract psychopaths.
Theme from Taxi Driver. Good choice, Kevin.
Oh yeah,
right on the money. So the other five are police. The other five people that would be attracted.
By the way, you're listening to the Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI, and we're talking about psychopathy. And Kevin is talking about the other five. What?
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. Yes, we're also here with Lynn Vanilla and
the
Ken
other
Robichaud.
Five
people, professions that attract psychopaths. So we said CEOs, lawyers, TVs, and radio sales, and surgeons. And the top off the list are the police, clergy, journalists, chefs. Talk about in control and knives.
That's the first of those four that surprises me. The other three don't surprise me at all.
Yeah, chefs surprise me also. But as Kent said at the break, surgeons have knives.
Mm-hmm.
Chefs have knives with their names on them. So, and also control. I mean, the chef is the head honcho. And finally, civil servants. Civil servants can be drawn to that, because I guess that begs the point of psychopaths often don't rise necessarily always to the top. They like to be below the radar, game the system, but not necessarily dictate the system.
Well, they game the system, but they don't want to be in the system.
That's right. So as a journalist,
they stay out of the system.
Yeah, so it makes sense. Journalism would make an attractive career. But any of those that surprise you, Ken?
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things I find is the irresponsibility of the sociopath, right? The lack of being able to show up on time and get things done. And you can imagine that constantly with the sociopath or the antisocial, they have some obligation. Again, I want to pick my child up after school or something, but, you know, I want to seduce this woman I just saw 10 minutes ago while I was walking to pick my child up at school, or I want to go get a drink, or I want to do something to make me feel good. So it's really remarkable with that aspect of irresponsibility, unable to, you know, be in a workplace because the rules of time and the rules of engagement at the workplace is often something that gets a sociopath in trouble. And then again, their lack of ability to follow through with homework assignments in school and then as an adult, because again, some impulse, some other thing, pleasurable, enjoyable, selfish kind of thought or impulse is trumping their ability to follow through and be a responsible student, adult, caretaker, and the like.
But I think it's that piece in between the impulse and the consequences, which they're not really even giving any thought to, which is where they get caught and they get stuck. So even in a therapeutic situation, as clinicians, when we're dealing with psychopaths, think about how they're either late or they're early. They always seem to have an edge because of this need for control, and that's an ongoing theme. And I think that makes this whole piece of where treatment is available to people with a psychopathic personality can get to be very troublesome.
Let's take a call. Let's take some calls.
Good idea.
Give us a call. 212-757-5555. Tell us, do you live with a control freak? Do you know somebody who is trying to control everything? If you know a psychopath, we want you to call us for sure. There are many, many aspects of the psychopath we haven't yet even talked about. There's like 22 qualities, characteristics. We've only talked about four or five of them. But, you get the point. Manipulativeness is key. Absence of feeling. In general, inability to feel empathy or love, control, the need to control everything. So you don't need to know an exact psychopath. But if you have experience with somebody who is a control person, give us a call. Let us chime in. Give us some feedback on this discussion. We have many more things to talk about here, but we'd love to hear from a caller. So why are these people so attractive to women, Kent?
Why are they attracted to women?
I mean, all of the classic murderers, the serial murderers. You'd think of, what's his name, Bundy.
Yeah.
He was a seducer.
Isn't that classic, though, of when you're talking about sexism? I mean, of course, it gives the man the edge, So it's a weak kind of situation where you'd have a woman tending to be much more vulnerable and much more available for his exploitation. So that's an interesting piece.
Yeah, but also I wonder if they're attracted to this living on the edge quality. I mean, these people are very seductive. Their energy can be just so domineering and so attractive. If they're verbal, also there's one quality on the list is that they're never short of words. They always have something to say. Even anybody, they could talk to a lamppost.
That's
true. So, this is part of their armor and part of their repertoire.
Where they seem to have a magnanimous personality.
So if you're a quiet, like, office worker, as a woman or your reception or different types of jobs, and you see somebody like this, they're living out a quality that you might be attracted to. I'm wondering if that's part of it. Kent, what do you think?
Yeah, again, I think that they're the sociopath's capacity to, sort of analyze the person they're talking to and sort of figure out what is it that I need to say or believe or act that will make you like a snake, charmed and make you feel like I like you and I think a lot of you and I'll compliment you and I'll look deeply into your eyes as I talk to you, that almost gives the impression that I think you're really dreamy and yummy or something like that. In fact, it's just a scam to, get you to buy some furniture or to, take you home tonight and seduce you and break your heart, because I'm never going to see you again because I'm telling you I love you or something and I just met you with only sexual exploitation really on mind.
So that kind of confidence is really attractive. They'll feel no remorse at all that they're lying in the process of saying anything they can to bed a woman or get somebody. Ben has a call. Yes.
Hello.
Hi. This is Kevin.
Yes. Am I on?
You sure are. What's your name?
Oh, thank you very much. My name is Roger. I'm listening to the show. I'm a longtime fan of BAI, and I think you guys have been right on. Now, I can say from experience, my own father He's been basically by my analyst, he's been labeled a narcissist, but he's married to my stepmother, who was a pure evil sociopath, and her two sons are exactly, you know, coming into the parameters that you're speaking of. Yeah. And, I mean, they wiped... My father has total lack of empathy. He will lie to you always, anytime it meets his needs. His lack of empathy is astounding. I mean, he never helped me once in my life. They wiped my life out. I have done nothing but struggle my entire life. Okay? I mean, it's just shocking as I got older. And I've got the knowledge now, and I went, you know, I've been in long-term therapy, that I peeled the onion, you know, the skins back step by step, and came to realize.
Are you able to feel, Roger?
Yes. I'm completely different than them, because my mother at least had, my mother was unbalanced emotionally and had a postpartum when I was born. I was hit and given up at one. But the thing is that my mother at least did have feelings. She was unbalanced, but did have human feelings. And I do. That is one of my main traits, is that I'm completely opposite to what they are.
Yeah, well, that's quite astonishing. And Linda, go ahead.
That certainly addresses the whole notion that it could be passed down, because, Roger, obviously you've been successful and you have been, you know, you've beat all of these major challenges in your life, and I commend you for that. And I thank you for the call. I really am. I'm glad that you're a longtime listener. And obviously you've taught yourself a lot in spite of the challenges that you have met with your family members. So thank you for this, because it makes us all know that we can beat the odds, and we can come out of this as long as we stay alive and keep learning and listen to BAI.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks for calling. Call us again. Bye-bye. Okay, we have another call. Hi, this is Kev O'Donoghue. Thanks for calling The Positive Mind. Who's this? Hello. So, you can survive a psychopath. You can be raised and...
Yeah.
Hello.
Having some problems with that new phone system. It's all right.
Yeah, okay.
All right, they'll call
it's
back.
It's all right.
They'll
we're still getting...
Back. But I think it's important for us all to understand that when we're talking about diagnosis and pathology, you know, especially for all of us as listeners, as clinicians, that there's always hope, that we're always learning, and that we keep evolving. So through education, through understanding, through knowledge, you know, we can grow and we can make things better for all of us. You know, I like the whole notion of, you know, the giraffe studies and how their necks got longer as their need for food became right. more evident. Well, I think that maybe here we can look at, maybe we all need a better quality of life. So being able to trust one another and use a little bit more kindness could make a world of difference.
Thanks, Linda. We have another caller on the line. Hello, caller. What's your name? Hello. Oh, there we go again. We lost him.
They were on that time. They hung up.
Yeah. But, Kent, how do you treat a psychopath? I mean, do you prescribe meds? What kind of meds will work, will help with psychopaths? I mean, you mentioned ADHD, lack of impulse control.
Yeah, one of the things that ADHD and not to say that everybody with ADHD
becomes. Of course not.
Becomes,
yeah,
but
of course
not. A high percentage of untreated people with ADHD, you know, share in common, you know, a sort of boredom and impulsivity that goes along with both those disorders, you know, so that is something that can be helped with medication. Certainly in terms of psychiatric, you know, people with bipolar mood swings, they certainly during their manic phase of their bipolar, they can often exhibit some of the grandiosity, recklessness, and aggression somebody with this personality disorder has 360.
Medications would help with that. We have another caller. Hi, this is Kevin. You're on the air. What's your name? Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve. How does this resonate with you?
Well, I was about to get out of my car and make a sales call, and I was listening, and I said, wow, this is interesting.
Do you run into a lot of other salespeople that are, like, off the charts?
Oh, yeah. I can be off the chart sometime, and I've been a CEO, so what you were saying about the types of people that are sociopaths is kind of a... disarming. So I said, let me call and find out if I'm a sociopath.
Well, do you have any feelings in your life? Are you able to feel anything? Do you have a partner?
Well, I'm divorced. That's a good question about feeling. I feel all the time. I don't express it much, and I'm guarded, extremely guarded. But I've had a lot of loss in my life, and I don't know if I attribute it to that or control. I thought about what you said about the control aspect of this, and am I looking to be in control of things all the time? Right. I am trying to be in control a lot, but I do surrender control to the universe at times, because I just realized that I realized some time ago that you really can't control what you can't control, and you really don't control anything. You just set things up.
So you're not a psychopath.
Oh, good.
We have to interrupt you right there. That's the right. Fact that you can trust in the universe in some way and realize that you can't control what you can't control, you're already outside the box. So,
oh, good.
So I'm sure you knew that anyway. Kent, did you want to say something?
Well, I always feel that, you know, some aspect of spirituality and humility is a very important part of all of us, or at least me, who struggles with childhood fantasies about being all great, all knowing, all powerful, the three aspects of God, right? I mean, all powerful, you know, many people, I think, you know, have fantasies of being all powerful and being able to control people around them. And it takes a bit to be like, you know, accept humility that, again, I'm not God. I want to be God. I wish I were God. But only, you know, God can be all powerful, all knowing, and all controlling. I make mistakes. I hurt people, unfortunately. So I can say I'm sorry. And oops, I made a mistake. And certainly, the only person I could control is Kent Rumbertraw. But there's part of me that wishes I could control Kevin and Linda.
Of course.
Listen, we'll have to thank the caller for calling. Thanks for taking the time to stop and call us. We have another caller on the line. Call us again. We explore you even a little further on other possibilities, okay? Hello. We have Catherine on the line. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Ben.
Hey, this is Kevin and Ben. How are you, Catherine?
Hi. I'm okay. How are you?
Good. So what about this resonates for you? Do you know a psychopath?
I believe I do. Two people that are married, one of them being my sister.
Oh.
At first, I was listening and thinking, okay, they fit the criteria for a sociopath, but when you started talking about the destruction,
right,
I see. I know clinically a psychopath would maybe have a history of killing animals and, you know, like the murder part. But right. If you destroy relationships, as in my sister's cyclical systematic pattern with her husband,
she's had multiple husbands.
No, I'm talking the same person that she's married to. They break relationships with other family members out of control and lies.
Right.
And then they are manipulative to put it back together and then tear it apart again.
Oh, okay.
So I was curious if that was...
Well, that would be... Go ahead, Linda. Linda wants
accurate.
To chime in.
Yeah. Hi. Uh-huh. Hi, Catherine. It's Linda here. Yes.
Hi, Linda.
Thank you. Hi. I'm glad you called in. I think when you're looking at that relationship where there's a person who seems to be deliberate in exploiting not only herself, her husband, but other family members, you certainly can see this ongoing cycle of manipulation and destruction and a whole lot of anger. So I would address it and simply say, yeah, it probably is appropriate to label that, but maybe we need to leave that for a diagnosis by somebody else. But it certainly hurts when it's your sister. So that's where I think, you know.
And how I'm curious how she was as a young person. Is she capable of feeling now, but was she capable of feeling as a child? Did you have a lot of fights with her? I mean, what was that like? Are you still
I think I'm just processing. So sure. I think the inability to feel and relate, it was there as a child. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can't give a full diagnosis. There are plenty of other aspects.
Not.
But
it's not.
I'd say the last one would be lying. Does she lie?
Yes. And believes the lies.
Okay.
Believes the lies.
Kent is going to... Yeah. Kent is going to chime in here for a second.
Yeah, I mean, that aspect of... It's a very complicated one, you know. Mm-hmm. Do people believe their own lies? Yeah. You know, that's a very people always bring that up because I work with substance abusers, and they're, you know, again, they're constantly like, "Oh, that's not my cocaine there you just found, or that bottle of wine that's near my office desk is not, you know, like." And I sometimes struggle with, do they really not believe it? I don't know. Like when Bill Clinton said, "I did not have sexual relationships with that woman."
Yeah.
At that moment, did he? And again, he said that kind of angry and indignantly, as I remember, even though he was guilty. But did he at that moment forget about Monica Lewinsky? You know, I don't think so. But that's my belief system. I don't know. But I think a lot of people are just, again, very consciously handicapping. You don't have it on videotape. You can't prove it. Like lawyers, you know?
Right.
Like lawyers often, when they have a client, they're like, is it beyond reasonable doubt, this accusation? And if I'm thinking you can't prove it, I'm denying it.
Right.
You know, but in that vein, though, Ken, wouldn't you say that that's sort of part and parcel to the profession? Because that's what they're taught. If it's not,
yes,
you know,
right.
So when you talk about being soulless and not having a soul, as oftentimes it's thought among psychopathy that they don't have a soul, this idea of they live in their own lies becomes part and parcel to that. So, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine, we want to thank you. Did you want to make one last comment?
Thank you.
We want to thank you for calling. And
thank you.
Good luck with your sister on
thanks,
all this,
Catherine.
On this stuff. But yeah, you know, lawyers have to convince themselves their clients aren't guilty.
Yeah,
I think
when Linda talked about what they know, and those of you who watch South Park know Eric Cartman's mom as a reference, that, you know, the parent who's constantly sort of paranoid agreeing with their child, right? The child comes home in trouble and the child has some kind of, oh, the teacher picked on him, or I didn't throw it, or something like that. And then you get the parent who then backs their child and then goes and yells at the school or something like that. And you think about that is lawyers' jobs. I mean, to be fair to them, their job is to be an advocate for the person, not the advocate for the truth. That's the judge's job. But their job is, you know, to be an advocate to present their side, and certainly, like, I think a lot of lawyers, like a lot of sociopaths, in the sense that my opponent is doing the same thing, because again, it may feel unusual the way antisocial and sociopaths go through the world, but their belief system is that everyone is like them, that other people just aren't as smart and conniving as them, but they're feeling is it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I would rather be the one on top. But everyone's like me. Everyone lies. Everyone manipulates. Everybody just uses people for their own means. Love, tenderness, compassion, altruism. Like, that's doesn't exist.
Right?
Those are fantasies. Mm-hmm. That's like Santa Claus or something to their belief system. So they're not that troubled because they see the world populated as like people like them, and they just think they're better at it.
Prison sounds like a natural place for psychopaths to end up. I mean, if you want a buddy psychopath, a prison would be the place to find them. So talk about a little bit about the prison population. You know, there's this TV show on cable, Lockup, where you can really see the psychopathy up close. One image I have is the inmate who can't blink. You know, whose eyes are open, always open, and ready for violence at any moment. They have nothing, no sensor to turn this off. Could you talk a little bit about the prison population and how psychopaths end up there?
Yeah, again, I think the most empathic and liberal therapist, hopefully, you know, understands the underlying trauma, feelings, hurt that underlies this behavior. But you know, I've come to the point where I believe that there are people in our society that will constantly be unable to live amongst honest, fair people, that they will constantly want an edge, they'll want to exploit, they'll justify stealing and acts of violence. And it makes sense to me that the only place such members of our society can be and stay alive is a prison, because they need to be locked away from those of us who are abiding by, dare I say, the golden rule, right? Just treat people the way you want to be treated. I don't like to be lied to. I don't like to be stolen from. I don't like people to hit me. So it makes sense that I don't want to do that. But I think, as we're saying, a lot of these people lack that basic core golden rule empathy of fair play, and they need to be, and as you're bringing up, and they talk about this with juvenile delinquents, again, you know, it's a complicated thing with a 14, 15-year-old. You put them with other troubled, angry, defiant kids. Mm. Maybe they're reinforcing this behavior, like a gang or something like that, or a mafia.
And getting punished is also kind of looked for. You want to get more punishment.
Right, right.
Because you become immune to punishment.
And the other piece of that is that that also plays out in group therapy. When group therapy is part of psychopathy and you're putting people who suffer with this in a group, those things play out as well, where they feel they have to be locked up, they have to be isolated, because they can't really, if the only way they can be in the group is to manipulate. And because they can't be on top or underneath, they get lost.
Of course.
And that's where group therapy becomes another ongoing problem, which I found out in my own experience in Fort Belleville when I was working with PTSD.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
Fascinating. It's tragic also because the prison population, they're not getting the treatment that they need. They were often born with this in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it's a vicious, vicious cycle. It's really tragic. But we're glad we brought it up today. I think this is useful for people to know what's the opposite of psychopath? What's the opposite of psychopathy?
Okay,
and check your own mental health.
Well, I think, again, you know, some of the callers didn't call up. Again, as you can imagine, most people at some point, we catch on that this person is manipulative, or like you can't pull it on too long. You know, as Mark Twain says, you can't fool all the people
all the time.
But you can fool some of the people all the time, and they need help.
Ken Robertshaw, we want to thank you.
Thank
Linda
you,
Vanello,
Ken.
We want to thank you. If you want to contact either one of them, you can contact them here at the Positive Mind Center, 212-757-4488. Ben Starr,
Good to be here. A pleasure to have you today. Absolutely.
We missed your voice a lot today, but, you know,
hey,
we'll look forward
to
it next week.
Thank you both for being here.
You're
it's
most welcome. A pleasure.
You've been listening to The Positive Mind. We're here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. and only on 99.5 FM WBAI. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Take care.